My grandfather was an entrepreneur. Before World War II, he started a couple of restaurants in Japan. And then during the war itself, he actually had a factory and made ammunition. After the war, my grandfather began designing and building golf courses. And then with the help of Mr. Soichiro Honda, the founder of Honda Motors, my grandfather built the world's first semi-automated golf caddy, which ran on a monorail. It was a multi-million dollar project, but it was floundering. And I remember how my grandfather would talk restlessly about how he was hoping against the odds that this fair caddy would succeed. And if he could make it with this venture, he felt that he would finally find some satisfaction. Several years ago, I was in Queens, New York City with a friend, an Italian-American friend of mine. And I remember how he took me to his uncle's bakery and said, "Ken, you can have whatever you want, any pastry, any dessert, any cookie, it's all in the house." I felt like a little kid. And when we walked out, my friend said, "My uncle, the owner of the bakery, has been saying that this year at the Baker's Convention in St. Louis, I am finally going to bake a better cannoli than Louis." And apparently, my friend's uncle was thinking, if only I can bake a better cannoli than my rival, then my life will have more meaning and significance. We're in a series right now in the book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. And the central character of the book of Ecclesiastes, King Solomon, or someone taking on the persona of Solomon, is on this quest for meaning. And he seems to have an infinite amount of money and power and freedom to pursue this search for meaning. And according to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 3, he wants to see if there is anything to be gained, any profit to be had, any advantage to be secured under the sun. And under the sun means only under the sun, without God. And today we're going to look at how the searcher for meaning pursues success and achievement as a way to feel significant in life. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 4 to 6, the searcher for meaning says, "I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees." Now, the word in verse 6 translated groves comes from the Hebrew word pardeh. It actually has its origins in ancient Persia. And the word pardeh can actually be translated paradise. And so Solomon, or whoever the author of this book is, seems to be trying to recreate paradise, a kind of Garden of Eden. And then in verses 7 and 8, we read, the searcher for meaning say, "I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces." So the searcher is amassing property and livestock and lots of wealth in the form of silver and gold for himself. But after amassing all of these success items for his resume and all of this money, what does he conclude? Well, according to verse 11, he says, "Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun." And then in verses 22 and 23, he writes, What do people get for all their toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain, and even at night, their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. So the searcher is toiling and working, and he's quite successful, but even at night, his mind does not rest. I remember seeing an interview where someone was talking to Elon Musk, the massively successful entrepreneur, the founder of Tesla, the founder of SpaceX, the aerospace company that builds rockets. And the interviewer was saying, "Elon, a lot of people envy you. A lot of people want your success, your money, the women you date. A lot of people want your life. What's it like to be you?" And I remember Elon Musk saying, my mind never stops. It's like there's a constant explosion going on in my mind and I can't turn it off. And he seemed to be so tortured. And the writer of Ecclesiastes is saying, a person can work really hard, can anxiously toil, perhaps achieve some success, but if their minds aren't able to rest, if they can't find peace, then they're just chasing the wind. It's meaningless. It's in vain. A frequently asked question in well-being research is, can money buy happiness? According to Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist and professor at Princeton, he says, his research shows, his and his team's research shows, that the satiation point beyond which well-being and happiness is no longer increased was a household income of about $75,000. And this is in high-cost areas. It could be less in areas where the cost of living is lower. What is the average increase of well-being and happiness associated with incomes beyond this $75,000 of household income? Well, the level of increased well-being and happiness is precisely zero. Now, Professor Kahneman points out that this finding was surprising because with higher income, you can afford to vacation in more exotic places. You can get a better home and experience more pleasures. But Kahneman and his researchers point out that these increased pleasures do not show up on reports of experienced well-being and happiness because the higher your income tends to be, the higher your stress level tends to be, the more pressure you're facing. And so you're not really able to enjoy the pleasures that your money can afford. And Solomon, or whoever is writing this book, would say that this too is meaningless. It's chasing the wind. You can work hard, be successful, but what's the point if you can't rest at night, if your mind is constantly going, and if your happiness isn't growing? In Ecclesiastes 2, verses 18 and 19, the searcher for meaning says, it's possible to work really hard under the sun and to accumulate wealth, and then you die and you end up leaving your money, your fortune to someone else who may prove to be a fool. This too is meaningless. It's chasing wind. It's in vain. And then in Ecclesiastes 2:9, the searcher for meaning says, I became far greater than anyone in Jerusalem before me. And if the writer is in fact Solomon, he becomes incredibly famous. And he becomes widely recognized, a huge success in worldly terms, loads of money. And some people, of course, search for significance through success, achievement, recognition, respect, fame. As far as I can tell, as I look into my own heart, I'm not on a quest for significance by trying to create a mountain of money. But if I'm honest, there is a part of me that feels that if I am only widely recognized and respected, that my life will have more meaning and significance. And this part of me was evident in a recent dream. So I was in a conversation with my brother, and we were talking about how you know whether you know that you're in a dream when you're dreaming. That is, how do you know that you're in a, quote, lucid dream? And my brother pointed out that if you look at your watch and if time keeps moving forward, then it may be that you're not dreaming, that this is real life. But if time starts to move backwards, then that's a clue that you're dreaming. And so that very night, this is a little embarrassing to share, I had a dream. And in my dream, an editor that I work with here in Canada of a Christian magazine taps me on the shoulder and says, Ken, you're going to be the next Prime Minister of Canada. She said, I'm going to be the interim Prime Minister, but you're going to become the Prime Minister. And my heart immediately thought, wow, I'm going to be widely recognized here in Canada. And if I do a good job, well, I'll be widely respected as well. I also thought, if I do a bad job, I'll be really hated. And the thought went through my mind, boy, I don't know much about parliamentary procedure, so I wonder if someone will send me off to a university to bone up on that. And I also thought, I'll probably have to move to Ottawa. I'll be even busier. That means less time with Joey, and my heart sort of sank. But people were congratulating me on becoming the future Prime Minister, and that made me feel good. And then I headed off to some other location, and I was listening to someone give a speech. They were asking me for some feedback. They were practicing. And I look at my watch, and it's 4:30. I look at my watch again a little while later. It's 4:38, so time is moving in the right direction. I look at my watch again, and it's 2:30. Time is moving backwards. This is a dream, I thought, and I woke up. And I think that part of what the dream is telling me is that at some level, I believe that if I'm only recognized and respected, my life will have meaning and significance. The Swiss-born philosopher Alain de Botton says, there are countless men who have made a fortune so that when they are at a party, people won't simply look through them. Could have said it about women, but he was saying it about men. There are countless men who have made a fortune so that when they're at a party, people won't look through them. And the searcher for meaning, Solomon, or whoever the author is, says, been there, done that. I've made my fortune. I've been really successful. I'm one of the wealthiest and most famous people who has ever lived. And I'm telling you, it's meaningless. It's chasing the wind. It's in vain under the sun. And modern searchers for meaning have said the same thing. The Canadian comedian and actor Jim Carrey has said, you may have heard this, I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they dreamed of, so they can see it's not the answer. Brad Pitt, the famous actor, said, the emphasis now is on success and personal gain, and I'm sitting in it, and I'm telling you that's not it. I'm the guy who's got everything. I know, but I'm telling you, once you've got everything, then you're just left with yourself. The actress, Halle Berry, asks, beauty? beauty? Let me tell you something. Being thought of as a beautiful woman has spared me nothing in life. No heartache, no trouble. Love has been difficult. Beauty is essentially meaningless, and it's always transitory. I can't believe what people do to make themselves look beautiful. They still have that hole in their soul. And the searcher for meaning, the Solomon figure, says the path of success, money, fame, under the sun, that is, without God, will prove to be meaningless, chasing the wind, about as fulfilling and lasting as the smoke from this match. And so the searcher for meaning eventually realizes that in order to live a meaningful life, he and we need to live not just under the sun, but above the sun as well. That we need to live in the presence of our Creator. We need a life lived with God. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 12 and 13, the searcher for meaning writes, "I know there is nothing better than for people to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God." So the searcher is saying, find satisfaction by enjoying your food, your drink, your work, your relationships as gifts from God. Live not just under the sun, but live above the sun as well. In the words of the great African theologian, St. Augustine, live not just in the city of man, but in the city of God as well. And then Solomon advises in Ecclesiastes 4:6, and this is an important verse for me personally, better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing the wind. In other words, don't overreach, but be content. I'm a competitive person, and I can struggle with contentment. I can compete and compare. And so each morning at the end of my time of silence, I'll pray a number of things, a number of intentions. And one of them is, may I be content. May I be content. May I be content. And if I feel that I'm competing with someone and envy and rivalry rises up in my heart, I'll pray it in the moment. May I be content, silently. May I be content. May I be content. I've also memorized Psalm 131. This is an important psalm for those of us who long for contentment. And it goes like this. My heart is not proud. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me. But I have calmed my heart and quieted my ambitions. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Love that part about I have calmed myself and quieted my ambitions. And like a weaned child, with its mother, I am content. I'll memorize certain passages of scripture or poetry because I want it to be not just in my mind, but in my heart and just sort of knocking around inside me. I need to be shaped by scripture and poetry. So Solomon is saying, find contentment as you live above the sun. Paul in the New Testament part of the Bible, in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6, writes, godliness with contentment is great gain. Solomon has been saying in Ecclesiastes, it's vanity, it's in vain, it is meaningless to work hard all of your life, your mind not really ever resting, and then to stockpile a fortune for yourself and then die and then have to pass along your treasure to someone else who may end up being a fool. And as he says these things, my mind is drawn to the words of Jesus in his great Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6, where he says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus then says, pray that you will have clear vision so that you can see what's most important and make the kinds of investments that will last forever. You don't necessarily need to be old in age to have this sort of wisdom, to have this sense that you want to invest in things that last forever. When I was considering what theological seminary to attend, I was looking into a school in the Boston area. I wanted to study with a professor of missions named Dr. J. Christie Wilson. He had served as a missionary in Afghanistan from 1951 to 1973, so for about 22 years. It was a different era, but it was also a challenging era. And Dr. Wilson was the one who had planted, who had founded, and was pastoring at the time the only church in the entire country of Afghanistan. He was forced out of the country in 1973. And when I was thinking about going to seminary, I wanted to go study with him. This would have been in the early, mid-1990s. And so I called an administrator at the school and said, "Can I meet with Dr. Wilson? I'd like to meet him in person and ask him to become my academic advisor if I'm accepted at the school." And the administrator said, "You can meet with him, but he's not taking on any new advisees at this stage in his career." So I went to Boston, went to the campus, went to Dr. Wilson's office, began a conversation. And early on, I said, "Dr. Wilson, I understand that at this stage in your career, you're not taking on any new academic advisees, but I wonder, I know we don't really know each other, but I wonder if you'd make an exception for me." And without any hesitation, he said, "Sure, I'd love to take you on." We took a walk around campus, stopped by the bookstore. Dr. Wilson bought me a book as a gift. I'll never forget that. And then it was a couple of years later, I'm a student, he's my advisor, and we're in his office. I can't remember how we got on this topic, but Dr. Christie Wilson was telling me about how when he was a student at Princeton, he was on the track team. I later found out he was the captain of the track team at Princeton. And he said, "I was competing in one of these intercollegiate track tournaments. It was a 400-meter race, you know, once around the track. And the gun sounds, and we're off. And I noticed that in front of me, a couple of the front runners are jostling for position, and one gets knocked over and falls down. And I keep going, and I pick up speed, and I turn a corner, and I pass everyone in front of me, and I cross the finish line first. And I ended up receiving a gold medal. But after receiving the gold medal, I walk back to the track, and I saw that the student who had fallen was still there nursing his ankle. And I approached him and I said, "You know, you had the misfortune today of falling. You were running better than me. If you had not fallen, you would have won the race, not me. And so you deserve this medal." And he took off the gold medal and he put it on this competitor's neck. Even when Christie Wilson was an undergrad student, 19 or 20 or however old he was, he had this deep desire to love and honor others. His priority wasn't to, you know, stick a shiny medal up on the wall in his dorm room to impress his peers or to have his parents show it off on his wall of fame at home. No, he wanted to bless others. And I'm guessing in an unconscious way, he was building treasure with God as he invested in others. And I am so proud and so deeply grateful to be part of a community where countless of you are doing similar things in your own way. I was heartened recently to hear the story of an English teacher in our community here at 10th. She has a friend who's Afghani, and this Afghani friend approached her and said, "I have family in Afghanistan right now, and their lives are at risk because of the violence that's breaking out right now with the Taliban. Is there any way that you could possibly try to help them?" And this woman in our community went to her local politician, didn't know him personally, but went to his office, so to speak, started communicating with this politician's office. And as a result, 13 lives were freed. They were evacuated before that August 31st deadline, and those 13 lives were spared. This woman in our community is investing in people. She's investing in people who will last forever in the kingdom of God. What about you? What would it look like for you to invest in things, in people, causes that will last forever, to build treasure with God? It may or may not be in investing in Afghanistan. God might lead you in a different way, but what would it look like for you? Don't chase the wind. Don't try to grasp the smoke. But heed the words of Jesus and store up for yourself treasure in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.